Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go!
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everybody, it's Chris Therrien, a.k.a. Bundy, and you are watching Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What is happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rigorelia? What are you saying, buddy?
Not much. Just dealing with some technical difficulties of a mic issue today. So here we are.
I think you've some of me has rubbed off on you with your
technology. I'm gonna blame it on computer technologies. This is not the operator.
Yeah, I hear you. What's going on?
So what's going on, Hockey World? Round two is underway, Nast.
Yeah, underway. As we are recording our pre and post for this week's show. Pretty interesting first round, man. A lot of game sevens, which was awesome.
Oh, man. Okay.
Just so much fun. Yeah, so much fun to watch, man. That I tell you what, that Dallas-Calgary series. I mean, I think Calgary's probably in the end a better team, but Ottinger and net for Dallas. And I mean, they just battled. Michael Raffel, man, I was messaging with him during the series, but he got hit the other night. I mean, you talk about a war. This guy, he went through a war on the ice, you know, like he got hit the other night and I saw it posted. I must have missed it during the game and I sent it to Scott Lawton. I sent him the video and he goes, man, he just takes a beating and just keeps getting up.
He's a big body.
I don't think people understand how big of a guy Raffy is and how strong he is. Kachuk kind of found out and I think it was game one where Raffy got in a little tilly and I would say Raffle got the best of it.
I agree.
But anyway, what a series, man. And, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, good for him getting that, you know, overtime goal.
Oh, yeah, that's huge,
I mean,
right?
I thought Dallas was going to win because I didn't think Ottinger could be scored on. I mean, the way he was playing and like confidence. That, right? But, man, if his career keeps going this way, he's going to have a hell of a career. He's only 23 years old, you know. But anyway, looking forward to the Panthers and the Lightning. I almost said the Heat.
the
Panthers series, obviously, with buddies of ours on both teams. So, you know, I think Florida might get by them this year. I know your predictions are already done, so you're not allowed to say
way off with it.
You lost. Hey, but Karts and Sid and the boys appreciated your pick.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was legit.
You know, they were up 3-1. No goaltending. And the poor Louis Domingue, I mean, he did the best he could. And God bless you, man. That's tough step in a series like that. But that first night when he came in overtime and stopped all 13 shots was pretty impressive. They end up winning that game, and it looked like they were going to win that series, you know. But
you
never know. That's why they play the games, right?
Yeah, for sure. And we got to bring up the Toronto-Tampa series just briefly because
what a series! I guess thank God for you guys, Calgary's still in it, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah, we got the battle of Alberta going on, so that makes up for Toronto. And Toronto just can't get over the hump, man. It's just back to square one. What a year they had too, and then to go out like that, man. Jeez.
It's funny. I was watching Steve Stamkos do his post game interview with the media, and they were asking him about that, and he's like, he gave them a lot of credit. He goes, "You don't understand. They're a really good team." He goes,
"Yeah,
but, you know, it happened with us too. You have to get over that hump. Once you get over it once, you know, it's mental, and you almost could just feel it, even though we're not there. That oh boy, game seven." You know, and how many times in the last few years has it blown up on them? Remember years ago when Reimer, JVR was still in Toronto and they had that meltdown against Boston that night to go on to the second round. And it's just, you know, last year you kind of feel for those guys because you know they're giving it everything they have, but it's almost like a mental block. And you can't take anything away from Tampa either, man. Like,
oh yeah, they know how to win. I mean,
if you're in a game seven, you probably don't want to play Tampa just because.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. They're the most experienced.
You know, and they're going around without you know Point gets hurt. I mean, he's a major part of their team.
Yeah,
but they know how to win, and it's scary. I mean, they're a scary team. So yeah, no, I did feel bad for Toronto, but. Man, it is what it is.
Yeah. And then old Mitch Marner got hijacked. How about that?
Oh, man. What a shame. Oh, my God.
That's crazy, eh? It's crazy.
Hey, what's wrong with people? Holy cow.
Yeah. I mean, I know, right? Like, it's probably, probably a better way to express your frustrations than hijacking a car from.
Well, they said. I read something, and it could have been wrong because you never know, but they said that the guys that did it didn't realize it was Mitch Marner.
Oh, really? Just a young looking guy that probably couldn't defend himself and look vulnerable.
Yeah, he's not a very big guy.
No, he's not.
It's like
at all.
Me getting carjacked. I'd be like,
yeah, exactly. Look at that way. Prime for the taking right there. Big target on your back.
It is scary, though. I mean,
no, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. But
thank
God he's okay. And, you know, he's got enough money to buy another car if they did get it.
Yeah, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. Hopefully, the best insurance around.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, now episode 74, Bundy in studio, 2.0.
Beauty.
You had a beauty. I think we're ready to rock.
Let's do it.
Episode 74 presented to you by Curaleaf, curaleaf.com, medical marijuana dispensary. Check them out. For all your pain management needs, curaleaf.com. Episode 74. Let's go, Nast.
Let's go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Suttlemeyer. And this week, we have our main man in 2.0.
2.0.
He does it all. A Flyers legend. Played here forever. He's got Snow the Goalie. Yeah. Podcast?
Yes, sir.
You do?
Yes, sir. Friend of the show, by the way.
Yes. Pennsylvania, your rehab center, recovery center. You do it all. Mr. Chris Therrien, welcome to the show, brother.
Guys, love you. You know that. I mean, I've been on here before. I think I came on like 8th or 9th last year when you guys started. So that was high enough for me. Anytime you're top 10 in anything, that's
big
good.
Time,
you're
right?
Top 10
great,
for sure.
Great to be back, though, guys. You guys have a great show. Watch it every week. Great guests and great hockey coverage. So let's rock it for a little while here. And here we go.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, man, we appreciate having you, dog. You know that, man. Yeah, you're my main man. We've been buddies a long time, man.
Long time.
And speaking of your show, like you guys do a great job too, man. We listen. Yeah. You guys are awesome. I love the rants. I love the. I shouldn't even say rants. It's pretty much factual.
Yeah,
right. I just love
just
the,
Bundy talking.
I love the intensity. I love the intensity. That's for sure. But I just wanted to start off, Dog, talking about the playoffs. Yeah. What are your thoughts right now in these series?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, coming off the heels of that Tampa-Toronto game the other night, the overtime game where point scores the winner. I mean, that's unbelievable, right? Like, what a great game. I think it's been up and down, you know, in terms of, like, you know, Nashville and Colorado. They've been done for so long.
Yeah, I know.
I forgot the series was on. And then, you know, then you go to our buddy Chief. You know, I mean, like, what a good coach he is. Like, yeah. I mean, so you look at the series, right? They're down. They get thumped in game three.
Right.
They're down 2-1. That's a pretty tough spot to be in. And what does Chief and his team do? They just run through them, right? Three straight.
Yeah.
Just remarkable. Really an amazing coach. But he's got the right guys, and he's been able to push the buttons. Playoffs have been good, guys. I mean, I think, you know, L.A., I mean, there's probably series that are closer than I thought they might have been, like Washington, Florida, you know, even Calgary, Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
At L.A., you know, L.A. is, like, kind of greasy with good goaltending, and then they're making it interesting at Edmonton. But Boston, Carolina, great series.
Yeah, no doubt.
I didn't think it would go seven after those first two games, to be honest with you.
Yep,
all home teams, right? Dog? Yeah, like, they're all winning those games. Yeah, so
Now it's a toss up, man. Game seven. You know that. Like, who knows what happens now?
Yeah,
yeah. Same with the Rangers, right? Like, the Rangers going to Pittsburgh. And I was reading some of the art stuff from last night. Like, they're a favorite tonight in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
With Crosby out.
Most likely out with the
upper body injury, which probably, I'm guessing, must be a head injury.
I
can speculate now. Yeah, it's a head injury.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be.
Too many years doing the broadcast.
Yeah, I know, right? You can't speculate.
You could see, like, as soon as he was hit, went down, he got up, went right to the bench. Like, you could tell he knew something wasn't right there. But, I mean, it's been pretty entertaining. Like you said with Chief, like, man, did they turn it on. And he made that switch, and I was kidding around. Benner made me nervous the first night, Bennington.
Yep.
Like, watching him, and he just looked like he was kind of fighting, but of course he hasn't played either in a while. But he did it. I mean, he played well in the last three games, obviously.
And there's so many buttons you have to push in a playoff series, too, right? Like, you know, like you get in there and you try to figure out, like, you know, where everybody's at. When guys come in the morning of a game, you kind of look at everybody, see where they're at. And then you're managing your goaltending situation, too, because, you know, guys get sensitive.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not starting tonight. But for some reason, Chief gets guys to get past that and focus on what the task is, and that's the game and winning that game and moving on. Closing out a series, you know, it's funny. When you look at all these series, it's been really hard to close series out. Colorado did it.
Right.
And Craig Berube did it last night. The other games, a lot of them are going seven and are dragging along. He closed out that thing in six.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was big.
Yeah, they played well. I mean, he is a great coach. We know that.
He's a great friend of ours. So obviously, you know, and a Flyer, you know, certainly had all the characteristics of the Flyers over the years. So, but I mean, just a great guy, great coach. And it's for some reason, you know, and by the way, like, I don't know Florida and Washington, but part of me really, too, guys, like from the East, I don't like to pick sides or anything, but I really find myself rooting for Wayne Simmons.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways. Like, I really do. Like, for my time doing between the benches and the years here, to me, he was, like, the greatest Flyer through that era.
Yeah.
For me, like, just unbelievable to help me with interviews. He knew that I wasn't, you know, by nature a broadcaster. Like, you know, we all go into training after hockey to do it. So I was really appreciative of him, having him as a reliable guy. You know, when we were up five or down three at the end of a game, Simmer was there. And so from that standpoint, I really think that what he's poured into this team and this league, I'd love to see him win.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Yeah, he was a legendary Flyer, and you know, he obviously took a lesser role these past couple of years. He is—he's one of a kind. He's one of the last, you know, the last standing, real, legitimate, tough guys to still play. Still can obviously play the game, but that element of toughness to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
He comes. Yeah. I mean, he comes into Philly, right? And you got exactly.
Yeah, right. He mops him up,
and there's Simmer at the end, like, you know, in a game that's kind of out of reach, and he's like, Let's do this. We'll do it. He just doesn't, you know, we're separate. He don't care.
Yeah.
Right.
So, exactly.
Yeah. He's one of those guys, too. Like, you know, I see Simmer walking. We'd see him before games, and the joke was, geez, he looks like he's got a pair of, like, you know, some dental floss hanging off his shorts.
It's amazing.
Yeah, right.
His legs are like that, right? And then he's the last guy you'd ever want to mix it up with out there. Guys don't know sometimes. They're like, oh, man, I found out the wrong way. That reputation's already way ahead of him now, but at one time.
Oh, yeah, right. Realize how explosive he is until he starts
And how strong he is on his skates.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, great balance.
Like you said, I mean, just – his little legs, like my legs are the size of Simmer's. They're
thin,
not as long,
thin legs, but... long, thin legs. Yeah. Yeah, just amazing, amazing strength he had too.
Yeah,
more strength. Yeah,
but an amazing attitude though too. You know, going towards the end of his career and fighting more than he ever has. Like, yep. You know, even in his prime, he was obviously scoring 30 goals a year there, playing power play and the whole bit. He was fighting, but not as much as he has. And I understand he's taking a lesser role, but to show up and do that.
After he's had a celebrated career.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do. I can tell you for myself, like, as I started fighting more, I was like, I want to fight less. Like, I would love to fight less, you know, and not have to keep having to prove myself, you know.
I get that a lot, Riley, too. I guess I'd ask you guys, you know, I talk to a lot of these tough guys, and I know we're going to talk about what's going on with that, but it's funny. I talk to a lot of tough guys at the end of their careers, and some of them almost, and I wonder about you, are like, man, I look back some days, I'm like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you see the human part of the NHL enforcer or the American, you know, the hockey enforcer and what they really thought. You know, we always thought they were the guy that was loving that, waiting on that fight. That was really never the case.
Yeah.
You know, you had a few guys that loved it.
Yeah, very few, I think.
But there's some guys that really did it as a job. And yeah. They're good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it wears on you, man. Like, there's nothing normal about fighting, especially in hockey where you're fighting. Well, you know, back in the day, you're fighting upwards to 30 times a year. It wasn't like you're fighting, you know, boxing, UFC, you're fighting two or three times a year. It's emotionally draining. Even the games that you didn't fight, You're amping yourself up to fight. Yeah, you know what I mean? How many times pots of coffee?
You were always
amped. I was always amped.
I can't speak at any level like you guys, but I will say this. And I always looked at it like the worst part of the fight actually wasn't the fight.
100%.
It was the lead up of, 100%. You know, looking at the sheet like, okay, does he want to go tonight? Does he not want to go?
That's exactly it. That was the hardest part.
I've said to you a bunch of times, I think, thank God I never had to do anything like that because I'm 0-4-1 in my off-ice. In my life, I'm 0-4-1.
I'd love to see that one, though.
Yeah, yeah,
it was
right?
It was a tie. But I think if I had to fight like that, yeah, I'd rather it be like you hit me and we just turn around and we go.
Just go.
Like, hey, dog, you want to go? And everyone's standing up, ding, ding, ding. Yeah. They do the bell in the arenas and then you got to square off like, I don't know. Like, you guys did that stuff.
So I don't have, like, a Riley Cote fight card under me, but I will tell you the most human story to my side of it was I had a fight against Jeff Aldridge.
It was a good tough fight. Tough dude, man.
But what was great about that was I never thought of it. I never had to think before the game that I was going to have to fight, you know, real farm tough guy,
yeah,
you know, right. Western Canada. And I did well. Here's the other side of it. We were playing back. That was in the fall. We were playing back in Colorado in, like, early March. And Dave Brown comes up to me about 2 weeks before that game. He's the assistant coach now. He says, hey, make sure you hit the weights and get ready. He goes, because that Aldridge is probably going to come back for you. You did a pretty good job on him in Philly. He won't forget.
What are you telling me
this for?
Yeah, right?
Okay, tell me 10 minutes before the game. Don't tell me 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm up in the weight room.
Come on.
Push-ups, dumbbell curls.
Man.
So I'm going up to the game, right? So, you know, we're at the old arena. It wasn't even the new one yet. And I'm out on the ice, and I kind of looked at Aldridge. I couldn't even think of the game.
I'm
thinking, like, and then if the flow started and the game picked up, and I was out on the ice against him, and nothing happened.
So you're like, thank God.
But 2 weeks of just like pure hell, hey?
You're lucky after the game.
You the first time.
Yeah, right?
He didn't want anything to do with it.
Created some space for yourself, yeah.
So, but you know what? But anyway, my point is that that was a totally different experience, and having an understanding for what you guys did.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's different when you just said, Doc, drop the gloves and go.
Yeah.
Never think it's okay. You get punched, you don't even feel the punches in the fight.
Yeah.
It's the lead up. That's the part that guys get stuck.
100%.
That any human being would not want to have to forecast.
Yeah. And that's what gets really old is the lead up to the fight and just the thinking about it. You're getting in the mind all the time. You're in the mind. And, like, you know, once you get in the fight, you're in the fight. You're in, like, the flow. Like, now it's intuition. You're no longer thinking anymore. You're just fighting, right?
Right.
And that's, like, the best part of it all is the fight. That was the easiest part of it. As physically demanding as it was all the mind game of it all. It was just, like, again, when is it going to happen? Is it going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, how is this going to go down? You know, I'd almost rather them dinging the bell, saying, 10 minutes into the first period, you're fighting.
Yes.
Versus, like, having to think, is this the time? Is this
watching
it? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Someone get hit, I got to get over it.
Overthinking every piece of it.
It's funny, dog, you said that about Brownie, because the quick story about him, my dad told me when he got called up from Maine, obviously way back in the day. He gets there, and everybody knew he was scary, big left-hander. So McCammon, I guess, the coach, Bob McCammon, God rest him, passed away. He hadn't played him yet in the game, and something had happened, and they had a faceoff right beside the bench, and Brownie goes, "Hey, man, if you ever get out there, I'm going to fucking kill you." Yeah. And all the guys are like, "Put him out there, Cagey." So he throws him out there, and that was the beginning of the Brown Dog, who eventually was the heavyweight for a while. Yeah. I mean, I would say one of the top, obviously the top heavyweights in the league.
That 80s crowd of the Probert, Koser.
Some scary dudes.
Yeah, man. It was a different animal back then.
Brownie, he's awesome. What a good man he is, guys.
Yeah, he's a great
awesome.
Guy. He was my first roommate, too.
Oh, is he really?
When I came in, so he's... He was something else. But, I mean, you talk about, like, you know, you go back where I actually looked at other guys, like my first year in the Spectrum. You know, I was a college kid, you know, and I came in. And when I went in, like, I was so glad I got to experience the Philadelphia Spectrum in so many ways because, you know, I really did see guys with Philly flu. I saw the fans over top of you.
Oh,
like,
you were,
in Philly.
They were
like,
right on top of you, man.
It was just an incredible building. And with that kind of, like, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers mantra of that the tough guys, you know, and Dave Brown was the king of that, you know, at that era. So,
Yeah, no doubt. Before we jump into one of your new projects, talk a little Flyers hockey. How did we get here?
Well, you know what? I think the problem is, I think when you have a team like this in a salary cap era, is you can't be wrong about what happened. So, the Nolan Patrick first, I go back well before that.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of gives like, you know, like they look at the team, first of all, one team wins, right?
Right.
At the end of the year and 30 others saw some teams go home and they're trying to retool to figure out what happened, whether you're the last place team in the league or you were eliminated in the semis of the playoffs. But I look back at the Flyers. First of all, many things have happened here.
Mm-hmm.
The core of guys they have here as advertised were not as good as advertised.
I agree.
Provorov, Konechny, they're not bad players, don't get me wrong. But they're not Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon. That's why the Patrick miss to me became such a big thing because you've essentially had the number two pick and all four of the next five guys are all ended up being really will have amazing NHL careers. A couple of guys stumbled this, like Pettersson had a rough year this year in Vancouver, by the standards he had. So then you combine a bad product. You've had Carter Hart too, who I think is a good goalie, and I think he's going to build himself up again with the right coach in here to kind of rebuild whatever's going on up there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see that much that rubber coming at you and that many chances coming at you, you're not going to get helped a lot, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot of deficiencies here. I mean, you had Keith Yandel this year. No disrespect to him. I know he's a great guy. He shouldn't have been playing in the league this year. I mean, no offense to him. I mean, he may be the power play, but I mean, he was minus 41, 42, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Baller. You know, those, and again, he's had an amazing career. He played over 1,000 games. It would be like me saying my last year that I shouldn't have been playing, but I was still in the league and I probably wasn't good enough or at the time even physically good enough to be playing at that time.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things happened in the years, but to me the biggest problem with this whole Flyer team is the problems and the animosity they've created themselves with their own fan base.
Yeah,
and that's the business side. I mean, like when you look at what they've done in Philadelphia, doing things for the sheer purpose of just doing them. Like, okay, so you come out, it started off, the business side wanted to put an implant, like their handprint on what's going on here. So let's remove the statues.
Yeah.
Start cleaning statues out of the side of the building. And then we're going to start firing alumni. We're going to start making all these changes. We're going to start turning the history of this team of what was once great by a private owner that loved his fans and his players and the community more than anything. You put a corporation in, and they've destroyed the fabric of what Philadelphia Flyers organization is. You know, I've said during the year, you can be a shitty team. It happens.
Right.
But you cannot devolve into a shitty organization.
100%.
And that's what's happened. And until somebody decides that they need to take this horse by the reins and make the change and say, let's get rid of whatever this is, it's not working. So, you know, I mean, look at guys. I mean, Riley, you were there in 2006, 7.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were the worst team in the league, the Flyers. It was my first year out of hockey.
Yeah.
they were still getting 19,000 people a game.
Yeah, I've said that too. Yeah. We were in the 40 years of the team was the worst year, but the place was sold out every night.
And the other thing too, and I say this, you know, because I don't think it's a huge issue, but it's something that they have to repair. The physicality of the league has hurt attendance, whether they want to believe it or not. The lack of physicality.
Right, 100%.
You hear it from the pundits, the hockey people, and someone's going to say, oh, look at these old dinosaurs. No.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. It's what sold. It's what worked. Yeah. They had a beautiful blueprint of an amazing league that forced you to compete, forced you to be competitive. Fans were sitting on a powder keg every night. That doesn't mean that we are advocating for line brawls or bench brawls. I'm not. I'm advocating and asking and demanding that they find a way to increase the competitiveness in the league, in a league that's no longer competitive. I love the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. Guys, the regular season is a disgrace. It's becoming like the NBA. And if they don't be careful, the Philadelphia Flyers standard, whether they have a good team or not, is never going to fill that building ever again. I don't care what the level of talent is like. And let me have a Stanley Cup winning team, but you got to get it right.
Yeah.
And right now, the crap they're selling, the gritty, the extra gritty, the other, all that stuff, nobody wants that. You know what they want? They want to talk to the guy in their seats. They want a good team. They want to see a hard-nosed Philadelphia team, because that's what this city's been about. Blue-collar, hard-nosed. They want a Stanley Cup in the infancy of their franchise, and that's transcended through generations. And you know what else? They want to listen to organ music. They want to talk to their people, the guy next to them at games. They just want to go watch a hockey game. They don't want to see some big, giant, you know, orange mascot obstructing their view and trying to put a focus on himself. You know? So grow up. Get with the picture. And the people that do work in the corporate side, they probably shouldn't be. They're not from Philadelphia. This is a unique, special sports town.
I agree.
And you can't have people from the outside coming in here and putting their handprint on it when they have absolutely zero clue what they're doing. And those people have zero clue what they're doing.
Yeah. You know, you said so many, you know, real things there. And do you think they deliberately blew up the culture of Flyers?
I do.
Well,
I mean, it almost seems like it. Valerie Camille, I mean, when she came in, she said... Flyers fans will have to adapt.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Adapt to what? To your handprint putting put on the team? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that means. Does it mean we're going to drape, we're going to put a drape over a statue and then rip it out and bring it out, you know, and then have an entire community try to get it in their towns?
It almost seems deliberately done to erase the history of the Flyers so they could put this new corporate, new age fingerprint on it. But, like, there's got to be a way to have both, like, still preserve the alumni and honor them, have them around the rink. They don't even want to come anymore.
Well, the alumni, you're right. The alumni doesn't really, I mean, I know they're trying to do stuff, and Brad Marchie does a great job.
Amazing job.
Like I said this year, guys, let's be honest with you, I think the Flyers organization themselves, like in the business, I know that, you know, they're still there and they're going to run their team how they run it. But for the alumni events, the Hall of Fame weekend in the game, just get out of the way. Let the alumni people handle it that know what they're doing.
Right.
Don't try to be involved anymore. I think a lot of those people are more there for their photo ops than they are anything else.
Sure.
Someone said, remind them of a human photo, a walking photo op. It's like, here, let me jump in any picture I get into. So, you know what? This organization's about way more than that. And I know at the end of the year, I think they tried to do some things differently. But it looked like it was just because a bunch of people were complaining about it. It's like, let's try something different.
Yeah, no, I agree. The essence of the Flyers has been lost, and
it kills the fan base.
It kills the fan base, and then again, the product on the ice, like there's no identity. Losing games happens, but like you can lose a right way and you can lose a wrong way, you know. And I think like there was no fight, not even without the fighting. It was like, there's just no fight
at all. Yeah, and even Atkinson said, like, they're too easy to play against.
Too easy.
The team, and you know, and then people go down. They don't want to, you know. And then the Flyers were dealing with stuff, too, in the city stuff this year, like with the vax cards and the masks and stuff. And don't think for a second that didn't hurt. That absolutely hurt.
Yeah,
sure.
For sure.
I mean, I went down to the Thanksgiving Day game, guys, the Black Friday game.
Yeah.
And I drove in with my son and Rick, my buddy, you guys know. And I left. There was 1,000 people waiting at the door to get in. I'm like, I'm not staying here. The first period was 5 minutes.
Because they had to get through.
They were checking everything. The digital tickets.
Yeah.
And I left.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not staying for this. So we went and ate Mexican food.
There you go.
We watched it on TV.
And watched it.
Like guacamole. I wanted to ask your opinion. If Ellis hadn't gotten hurt and Coots, say those two guys, how different is the season?
They're closer, but they're still down at the bottom of the pack.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, you're talking about a Ryan Ellis. If you got the kid healthy all year, you know, we're a better team with him. We're a better team with Coots. I still don't think that would have made them a top six team.
I agree.
I don't think it mattered.
Yeah.
And I said, like, I mean, I've been pretty straightforward. I mean, I even said it. Maybe that's why I'm not working there anymore. But I mean, I've said, like, they probably should have, in terms of what they're at for rebuilding or retooling, to me, I mean, I know some people would say you're crazy for saying, I think some people are saying you're right. They should have traded Giroux 5 years ago.
5 years ago, yeah.
Yep. He was here at the time for 7 or 8 years already.
Yeah.
You'd had a glimpse already of the five previous playoff windows. And I think that just for an asset retention,
right.
If you're going to trade, I'm not saying get rid of him for any kind of personality thing, maybe four, right? So you go back, but you're saying there came a window. And I know you couldn't get him to easily buy into that because he had that no movement,
sure. Mm-hmm.
And he was not willing to move that. I mean, there's a way around that. If if your GM's, really wants to move a guy, I think you can. But I think that's where it had to start. And to me, that's where the retool had to begin, because I think with a guy like that, the assets you could get at a point where his peak is so high.
Yeah.
I was always worried about the younger guys coming up with G. There's nothing about G in his talent or what he's done in Philadelphia. He's had a wonderful career here. I always just felt like he was far enough along with Voracek where the other guys were still trying to catch up as they were newcomers in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that separation in a lot of ways.
Interesting.
Yeah. I just from an asset, just from trying to get assets back or younger players getting younger. And that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
If he'd won three cups, nobody was trading Crosby, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah. So what does a retool look like this offseason? Like, what does that look like in your eyes? Because, I mean, that word keeps to be thrown around.
Well, I'm a believer more in a rebuild.
Rebuild, 100%, yeah.
Well, a rebuild means, so when I look at a rebuild, I actually look at the Rangers in a lot of ways. And they got a little bit lucky. Like, they had to go get Panarin. They mm-hmm. made a trade. Remember I was saying, like, getting rid of guys like a Zibanejad came in a few years ago.
Yeah.
That was a guy that they kind of kept in. They knew he'd be a long-term piece, and you have to have one of those, I think, coming in. Panarin became a good piece. Fox ended up coming out and being, like, a revelation in a lot of ways.
Yeah, 100%.
Jacob Trouba had a better year this year than he did previously. And then, like, Shesterkin. They got, what you think is the mirror replica, what you're hoping in Carter Hart, right? Shesterkin had an amazing year. He may even win the Hart Trophy. There's people talking about. He won't, but he's going to be up there.
He's in the top, yeah.
So I think that's what it looks like, but you have to be patient, and I think you have to let the fan base know that, hey, this is the path we're traveling right now.
Yeah.
You got to be careful. There's the word, like, I don't know if GMs think about it. The word retool is completely different than rebuild.
Yeah.
I don't know if the fans here want to hear about a retool.
Yeah, smoke and mirrors, right?
Like, we've been retooling here for 8 years.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're better off being honest with them and rebuilding.
And I've watched every bit of it, from, broadcasting. I've sat ringside. I haven't missed a Flyers game since 1994. And so that's why I have an opinion on it, and that's the things I've seen. I'm not a GM. Some GM may tell me to go pound sand somewhere. I don't care, but I've been around. I have a hockey opinion like you guys do, and and those are the things that I think I would have done. And I think that I think they just kept spinning their wheels for too long.
Yeah.
And I think that that was one of the problems.
Yeah. With the free agency this summer, what are you targeting, Johnny Gaudreau?
I'm not. But I mean, again, you need to get your points, right? Like, you got to have a skilled player in here. Yeah. I'm just thinking, I'm looking along the lines of, I'm looking forward to having Couturier back.
Right.
That's a guy, I really think he's like the primo carnero up front.
Mm-hmm.
I love, Johnny Gaudreau's had a really good playoff. And he'd been questioned before, years before, about whether, what kind of a playoff player he was. He had an amazing year this year. I'm not even sure he's the best player on that line.
Right.
To be honest, between Elias Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk. You know, they do a lot of heavy lifting.
Sure.
He does a lot of the setup. But, I want a guy, I'm looking guys like somebody that set the tone, barrel right through the middle of that ice, get to the net, change the mindset of the team. As we said, too easy to play this year. I like big center icemen.
Yeah.
Guys that get through, play the body. I shouldn't say I don't want him here. I don't know what's out there, Riley, and I don't know really what the guys' chances are in terms of where they want to go.
Yeah.
It makes sense because he's from here.
Right.
That's a lot of money, though. Again, is Johnny Gaudreau, if you overpay him, which you will, or maybe give him a fair contract, you make a lot of money, come here, is he going to make this team immediately a playoff contender? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably very few players that would do that, right?
With this group right now. I mean, and Mike Yeo at the end of the year, I mean, you can say what you want about the coach. Mike Yeo, not me or not you guys. He said Scotty Bowman and Toe Blake couldn't win with this team.
Right.
He did say
that. He did say that. Yeah. So, I mean, that's an indictment. You're basically telling your GM, you got a terrible team here, and we weren't going to win with it.
Yeah.
No one else said that. He did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're going to have – so is Barry Trotz the modern-day version of Toe Blake or Scotty Bowman? He might be. So why would you want him here?
Yeah, yeah,
he's
right.
not going to win with these guys.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Where do you think the coaching change is headed? There's a few names thrown around. You said Barry Trotz.
Yeah, Barry Trotz will be one of them.
Yeah, yeah. I know, like John Tortorella's
talk.
I mean, do you think bringing back some Flyers culture into the mix, or is it?
I like talk. You know, he's been around. Like, it's not like he's been implanted here for this whole year, and now they're going to elevate him to coach. I mean, he's been in Arizona. He's been won Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh. You know, so I think he's got a pretty good pulse on what he has. I think, you know, a lot of coaches now, guys get hired. If you talk to GMs, they hire coaches now tailored to, you know, work with the modern day athlete.
100%. Yeah.
That's true.
Better communicators, more like,
you know, like when I used
ground
to,
level.
We had a bad game. I'd have a GM call me and be like, you were horse shit last night and I don't want to fucking ever see it again.
Yeah.
Now if a guy has a rough game, he's like, hey, is everything okay?
Yeah.
Can I help you?
Remember, like Clarky coming down the one night telling you guys you better put wheels on your homes because I'll get rid of every fucking one of you.
Every one of you guys should buy a trailer with fucking wheels on it. That was rough. I mean, yeah, like a GM, like come down to the locker. I remember one time he came down, he ragged like 10 guys, and I was sitting there, and I'm like, oh, boy, I hope I get away with this. Like, just kind of sidesteps. So I'm sitting next to Desjardins, right? We're half dressed. We played Dallas that night. That was a 12 in a row that we'd lost it back in 99,
oh
I think,
God.
Or going into the 2000 playoffs. And he gets around, and I'm just trying to like keep my head down, like look at the car. and all of a sudden I hear, and fucking you, Bundy. He goes, poor Desjardins having to play with you every night. And I'm like, damn it.
That was hiding.
Oh man,
that was classic.
I remember him coming in. It got so bad with the Phantoms. He actually came down. Homer brought him down, Clarky, to talk the one day when we had Pavel Brendel.
Oh.
And we had this one kid, Pletka, who had a lot of skill. I actually think he scored the one game he got called up, he actually scored. His last name was Pletka. And anyway, Clarky comes down, everybody's in the room, trainers, everyone, and he just goes, okay, first off, guys, Pletka, you're done. He goes, go upstairs, Diana will give you everything you need, you're going home, you quit on this team, you're out of here. And I got everybody's attention, right? And he goes, and he looks over at Pavel Brendel and goes, and Pavel, you're on fucking speed dial, kid. Like that, and Brendel goes like he goes, and I'm like, oh, I'm glad he didn't see that. He gave him the old, you know.
Oh yeah, he had the worst attitude.
But he was bad. But
I remember Johnny LeClaire one night we were going out the ice, and it was I sit and wait, like, you know, the guys are huddling waiting to go up for warm up, and Brendel's there, and he's like, Johnny LeClaire goes, come on, boys. Let's feed off of Pavel's energy for this one tonight.
Is that not the truth, too, though? This guy didn't give a fuck about anything, man. Oh, my God. That's fucking great. Let's feed off his energy.
Oh, man. Well, moving on from Flyers, Bundy. You got a pretty interesting project that you recently signed on to. Why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, Ice Wars. I've had an out to Edmonton May 21st. I'm going to be out there all next week preparing for it. They're treating it like – so it's a new event. You know, you guys had AJ Galante on. And you know what's really cool with this whole – with the whole how it happened was I got a call about 2 months ago from a gentleman named Charlie Nama. And he says, Chris, how are you? He says, my name's Charlie. And I'm looking for a broadcaster for an event I have coming on. And Joe Watson is from my hometown of Smithers, British Columbia.
No way.
And he said,
Joe Watson.
He says, well, you know, Bundy was a really good announcer for the team, and he'd do a hell of a good job. He likes to talk, and he'd add some color and character to it. So I said, well, let me think about it, and I'll get back to you. So I, you know, as more came on, I learned about the players involved and what this was and talked to some people. And I said, you know what? Let me do this. So Ice Wars, I'm going to be, you know, and talking to AJ, what's really interesting with the concept, it'll be, and it's on pay-per-view. Like, I mean, this is a big, big thing. Pay-per-view on fight.tv, May 21st. So it's 9 o'clock Eastern time, 7 o'clock out there. We're hoping one of those, we don't have to deal with the Battle of Alberta, but we'll move on to that after, which could be staring us down. But you know what? I really think, though, guys, like in terms of the culture of fighting, and, you know, talking to other guys, Riley, you've been in, but there's a whole culture outside of hockey rinks, too. That guys, like, you know, like we have one guy who's fighting. His name's Hunter Warner. Like, he was a hockey player, signed by the Wild at 18 years old. He's a professional boxer now.
No way.
That's what he does. Jake quit hockey to be a heavyweight boxer, so he's trying to train in that. So there's a culture out there. I know the game, you know, as we were talking about fighting earlier and how the NHL is trying to change the thoughts of the concussions. In many ways, like Gary Bettman almost denies that concussions even exist.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those guys. I've had concussions or from playing hard over the years, never had one from a fight. But that was one of the things. But, you know, when I look at, you know, I think that was a big thing with Ice Wars. I'm excited about it. There's a cast of characters. Riley, I could tell you guys like yourselves were always the best guys in the locker room, the guys that I always had the affinity, you know, to hang out with, to want to be around. They were you guys were the most real guys. And so when I got involved with AJ and Charlie and some of the cast of characters, Frank the Animal.
Yeah.
Frank, me, and friends, I mean, since he was here in Philly. So it's just, I think it's going to be a neat event. I think that the really interesting thing, guys, and I know, is everybody's fighting with somebody in the world. Yeah. Whether it's like someone said, like a couple uncles or a couple aunts on Facebook going at over some, you know, Joel Embiid's playoff performance.
Yeah.
James Harden. Maybe not showing up for game six.
Taking
or
three
like
shots
that.
Or something.
One God. In the second half, but you know, who's talking basketball?
Yeah, right.
But anyway, you know what? My point is that I'm just I'm a guy that Riley probably always been the same, colorful, good locker room guy, and I'm going to carry that out there. There's a lot of the WWE theme to it. With AJ, he's been a fan of WWE.
100%.
Vince McMahon. He travels with them sometimes.
Yeah, we with talked WWE. To him about that. Yeah.
So this is something that I think the first thing people would say sometimes is, you know, what about the safety? Mm-hmm. And my attitude is, you know what? Our safety standards actually exceed that of the National Hockey League. They have 4-ounce MMA gloves on. That was my biggest thing. You know, no one ever wants to see anybody get hurt, no matter what they're doing. But I tune in every month for that MMA, you know, UFC 260 or whatever. We all have millions and millions of people do. And I think AJ said it best, and I did too, the more I progress along the road. It's not for everybody.
Right.
You know, some people won't like it, but there
don't
are
watch
people.
It.
I think a lot of people are going to like it,
There's a lot of conflict, you know, in the world we're in, and these guys love doing it. You know, there's a prize for them. But as I said, the safety thing was my biggest question coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the leather-strapped helmet's going to be bucketed right up, like tight under the chin. The gloves, no punching on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
So we have really, really taken, and AJ and Charlie have to make sure the safety is
100%. Because it needs to be a sanctioned event, right?
I mean, it's a sanctioned event at River Creek Casino in Edmonton. Okay. Like I'm so excited to be going out to Alberta. I lived in Calgary for a year in the Olympic team, so it's just a great chance to get around really great people again. People that I know are going to be great guys. There's some cool judges that are part of it.
Yeah.
Sean McMorrow, who's, I think he's had 500 fights in the minors. That's 500
That's
fights.
Crazy, man.
I mean, just think about it. That's almost fighting every single day. And if you go down the list, I'll post them. Like, there's some of the characters, like, I mean, you know, 43 fights in 40 games, seven post-game majors. Like, they're real characters, you know? Like, and then the nicknames, like the Hitman and
the Jawbreaker.
The Beast. But, I mean, these are the things I think people like. I think they're going to see quite a show. And I know that the best part of it, guys, some really good people around the event.
Excited
about it.
Are you 100%. Guys, I wonder if you, because it's kind of has a WWE feel a
it
little
does.
Bit. Are they going to do promos? Are the players going to get to do, you know, are you going to be
the way in the stare down?
Are you going to be like, Gene Okerlund?
Yeah. I always do the mad dog.
I like how you used to always like jump when a guy would say something. Right? You know,
like, to do the mean. But that's someone said, like, what do you like? I said, I'm probably going to be like Jim Ross. Like, and I think that's what our desk is going to be very similar.
100%.
Like, ringside, like, you know, by the whatever it is they do in wrestling, by the ring, this is ringside, not ringside.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So I've been ringside before, and we're gonna have fun. It's gonna be fun. The guys are the combatants are excited about it. The judges are. We have a Hall of Fame night. Frank the Animal will be going.
Are you in the Hall of Fame?
No, I'm not in the Hall of Fame for the fight. I can actually very humbly say no. I will never be in that Hall of Fame. Riley Cote, though, you never know. Riley Cote would be the only one who'd qualify in this room for that.
Might have to make a comeback.
Yeah.
Be a judge maybe next time.
Oh, you'd be a judge. You get called out.
Until some guys goes up to skinny Riley and goes, you're up next.
Yeah, exactly. We had a buck guy, 80 later, and 240-pounders again.
We had a guy, I think, Travis Levitsky. 6'3", I saw his card the other day. 6'3", 318.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no thanks.
How you doing?
No thanks. I'm past that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
But so anyway, it's gonna be cool. And you're right, Derek. There's a lot of that WWE flair to it, the Hall of Fame to start. So we're making an event. It's a new combat sport.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, but it's not. Because Hofke fighting's been around for over 100 years, right? Yeah. It's older than MMA. I mean, people might say, well, karate and jiu-jitsu and all those, you know, ancient
martial arts.
Asian martial arts. Yeah. And they are. They're much older. But there's something about a good old Canadian hockey fight that I still piques people's interest 100%. Even in these leagues. And I don't think that'll ever change. And I think if you ask the public in general, what's the one thing you'd love to see back in hockey more of? I'd love to see that sitting on a powder keg. Not necessarily begging that it happens. Just the possibility.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that accountability.
I said to AJ, we had him on. I'm like, you ever seen anyone in their seats when there's a fight? I mean, they usually aren't. No, there usually aren't anyone in their seats when there's a fight. So this is going to be really cool. I can't wait.
I'm excited to see how this thing goes.
I'm looking forward to it. I know. Thanks for your support, guys. You know, again, it's something that's I think is going to do amazing. I really do. I think people are going to tune in. I think they're going to enjoy it. We're gonna have some great music stuff coming in as well. So it's gonna be a really cool night at the River Cree and just in Enoch, Alberta, just outside Edmonton. It's 5 minutes from the West Edmonton Mall, apparently.
Okay.
So it's gonna be a pretty cool event, and AJ's great.
He really is.
He's really just has done an incredible job with his effort. We got some great people. Like Cato Kalin is one of the founder. Remember Cato Kalin?
Yeah,
sure.
Of course.
Yeah, like from the old, you know. How
did he end up in this?
Well, yeah, so he's friends with Charlie, and he's like a big player in Hollywood. That's what I first said, too. I'm like, someone said, oh, yeah, Cato Kalin's. I'm like, Cato Kalin? I'm like, isn't that the guy
OJ?
Isn't that the guy that bought OJ the Big Mac like an hour before that whole thing happened? And I'm like, holy Jesus. So I said, they talk about coming, the world coming around.
Yeah, I know, right?
But he's, what an unbelievable guy. Like, really? I've talked to him four or five, just an incredible person, and so full of energy and stuff. And yeah, he's one of the founders too. So the Galante family, just really good people too. You know, they bring a lot of, you can see they bring a lot of people in that weren't, that work for the Danbury Trashers and they have long memories, these guys, really, really passionate about, and they have a lot of care for the hockey community and the people that are involved.
Yeah. 100%. And AJ is like a natural born promoter, man. Like he's born for this, you know, between the wrestling and the boxing and then like making it a hockey event. I mean, hockey-centric event. Yeah.
And it's so funny. He talks about Philly, you know, like we want to do something. It's always talk was bringing something to
bring
Philly.
Philly's
a fight capital of the world, whether they want to believe it or not. But we were, you know, we were saying about just how fun, like Philadelphia. He says, you know, he goes, I do boxing. He goes, I got these good boxers, you know, come from Connecticut or New York. And he goes, and then they want to fight a guy in Philly who's like, you know, 13-10 and it looks good. He goes, mm-mm.
Yeah,
13-10 Philly fighters, it's not a matchup you want for your guy coming from there.
I heard him say that on your show, and he actually repeated it when we talked to him. He was like, just don't take that fight.
You just don't take it. Yeah. So that's a reputation, again, Philly has as really, in a lot of ways. This is boxing on ice.
Yeah.
Right. Essentially what it is. You know, it doesn't have the, you're not going to see a Darnell Nurse headbutt.
Yeah, right.
You know, they're going to fight with honor, and that's what it is. You know, same, very similar to MMA style, and we'll have refs. We have medical doctors on standby, so full operation, and I'm really excited, guys.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how this thing turns out. Hopefully, it's like AJ says, it's not going to be a one-off event. Like, you know, bring this thing to Philly, bring this place to some old-school markets. Yeah, exactly.
Bundy the promoter,
Gene Okerlund,
Tony Schiavone. Let me tell you something, Tony Schiavone.
Turn into the Paul Bearer, too.
Paul Bearer.
That'd be something else.
Oh, my God.
Well, Yeah, man, we wish you the best in that project there. I know you're a perfect fit for it.
I'll be carrying your spirit with me, Riley. All those memories.
Thank you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All those guys,
Shifting gears a little bit, another passion project of yours, business of yours, Pennsylvania Recovery Center. Talk a little bit about that and how you're helping people out.
So, you know what? Last year was very much a trial and error year for us, finding out about getting people in with locations, just kind of going through the gamut. We decided to change some people at the end of the year. And so I merged with Pennsylvania Recovery Center. We were Limitless.
That's right.
We're still the same place in Fishtown, but now we have an access to, you know, another facility in Phoenixville.
Okay.
So we kind of got the other side of Philly, and then we got, you know, down by the river in Fishtown. So this is really, guys, more in the last year and a half, probably more than I even talked to you when you first started this. I've really engrossed myself more into the community with it. I'm doing a lot more speaking. I'm having a lot more confidence coming out. You know, it's hard sometimes when you come out and you admit, you know, hey, I had an issue. And but I realize now at the end of the day, the only way for me to make an impact on people is to share that story.
Yeah, be vulnerable.
Continue to share it. It's almost like I strip my clothes every time I do it, because that's how you get your message across to people and have them understand. understand, like, yeah, there's been people like myself. There's, you know, I can't begin to tell you, like, we have the amount of lawyers or doctors you see with the same type of issues.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And so it doesn't matter. I mean, so why would a professional athlete, which we all know there's plenty of addiction issues that have happened with athletes over the decades they've in pro sports.
Yep.
But my goal is now to get out, to get those people into treatment, whether they need a 30, 60, 90-day rehab. My thing with Pennsylvania Recovery Center is the aftercare. The aftercare is still, to me, the most important thing. When you go away to a rehab, you know, I do work with, I think they're one of the best in the world, is Karen Recovery in Warnersville. Like, we're really lucky to have places like that around.
Mm-hmm.
When they go there for, say, 30 days and they're in their housing, you're safe. Like, if you're using heroin or you're an alcoholic, you're going to go in there, they're going to dry you out, and you're going to get, you're going to go on your walk to sobriety for 30 days. The problem is when you leave there again, you're going to go home, you're going to pass the same liquor store that you drove your car by every single day for the last 10 years. You're going to maybe see your drug dealer or know that he's still in that same spot.
Yeah.
So it's being able to live life in so many ways like that to be able to handle and defend what may still be going on in your mind, even though you got 30 days or 60 days under your belt.
Yeah.
So that's what I want people to know. Like, I've been over to Kensington in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Like, you talk about a wake up call. Yeah. It looked like a war zone.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's just like, and I think to myself, my God, this is Philadelphia. Like,
how is this happening? How
in America?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Like, people, like, and it's a lot of drug use in Kensington.
Sure.
But what I have seen on top of that is the amount of people making a difference, trying to do things.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of love and compassion in this city.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that will put themselves out there. You know, I'm lucky when my journey of recovery, and I say this, you know, humbly and gratefully, I'm so lucky that I was a broadcaster those years. Like, you know, I got it and I stayed true to myself. I stayed focused. So from that standpoint, you know, broadcasting and working with the team afterwards was really a blessing. Kept me on my straight track.
Yeah.
But now it's time for me to branch off. I never forgot the pain I was in at the end for me. I'd lost my sister in 2006, and my life for a while was really off the rails. So I had to own that, and I really feel now the best thing that I can do is to give back and let people know, like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's okay. You know, everybody has something wrong with them.
Sure.
And most people, probably almost all of them, don't want to talk about it.
You're right.
So yeah, the proud. Only way to do it is, like I said, strip your clothes off, be vulnerable, let people know that the things I did. You know, I never hurt anybody at the end of the day. Like, you know, I was a drinker, you know, and nothing good comes from over drinking anyway. People know that. But, you know, I've changed my life. You know, my kids have been amazing. Like, I've just received one gift after another, you know, with their athletics, the people that they become. So for me, I've been able to quantify that reward because I see what my kids are now.
Yeah.
And that was when I first came out. And I tell people this all the time. You know, you can... You know, if you're a parent of kids and you're struggling with addiction, you'll get your kids back if you do the right thing.
Yeah, right? So true.
You may not get all the other people you felt you damaged, but your kids will come back to you. And that's the great part for me, that my kids look at me now after, you know, 11 and a half years sober now, and I'm just dad. I might be dad the idiot. I might be dad the donkey. But I'm dad, and I'm not dad the drunk.
No.
And I always
dad,
look...
Dad, loving dad.
Yeah, right, yeah. And fun. And, you know, fun, like, I can do... And that's why I say, like, with anything there is in sobriety, I can go on and make a video on Facebook to say, hey, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I can come on a show like this and just be completely authentic for an hour and just say who I am. You know, whether right, wrong, or indifferent.
Yeah.
But those are... You know, I can go broadcast Ice Wars. You know, I can get out to Edmonton. I can do all these little things now. I can do a podcast. Come on here. Because I'm sober.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's my gift in life to myself was I didn't realize I had the struggles. But, you know, life, like I say, like Stallone said in one of those Rockies, you know, life ain't all sunshine and rainbows.
That's the truth.
You know, and you get sometimes you get pulled down to the ground, and it's a matter of pulling yourself back up out of that and being the best version that you were supposed to be of yourself. And that's what I try to do every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like you have purpose, right? I mean, that's
I have purpose now.
Huge part of us as a spiritual being is having purpose, right? You got to have something to wake up in the morning to look forward to. And once you don't, I think that's where it gets hairy. You talked about the integration stuff. Like it's easy to go away for 30 days, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like a safe container.
Everybody's watching you. Yeah,
it's
in
like
there,
the bachelor effect. It's like you're going away. Everything, the foods, everything's provided for you, safe container. But then you got to go back into the real world and deal with stressors and the things that would prompt you to maybe sliding back down into that way of life, right? But if you have purpose and something, you know, you said you had the broadcasting, it's something to lean on, like actually gave you something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I go out and meet, I go speak at recovery centers, mm-hmm. you know, for 30, 40 minutes at a time. I share my story of, you know, experience, strength and hope, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, it's a give back. You know, I don't get too deep. You know, people say, oh, you don't get too deep. They say, don't talk about AA and stuff, but you know, I'm a step one and a step 12 guy. You know, I admit mm-hmm. it, like I can never drink. Doesn't work, but step 12, also give back.
Yeah, 100%.
Get out, get the message out and help that other person still suffer. It's a lot of people that are, and you may not know them. And that's the biggest thing, too. I don't know, maybe I've gotten a little softer in my old age, Riley. Maybe I haven't either, but I always tell people, you know, be kind to each other because 100%. You just never know where somebody else is at in that moment.
That's
in
time. So true. That's such a valuable piece of information, true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going through their shit. You mentioned it earlier. Everyone's going through their shit. Everyone's a different part of the path, you know, so it's like
everybody has something wrong with them. You know, whether you're dealing with a financial thing. I mean, look at the mothers dealing with baby formula stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
I read an article this morning. It's a real problem. Imagine that. So everybody's got some anxiety or angst over something in the world.
Yeah.
And it's how you deal with that.
100%.
You know? And always asking for help. That's the other thing I tell people in recovery. If you're struggling, don't ever be ashamed or scared to ask for help. Just say, I need help.
Yeah.
And you're going to have people waiting for you. In droves.
Yeah.
That's how it is. But everybody, the more you don't do it, then you become vilified because you continue with that same behavior.
I want to ask you your opinion on like preventative measures. We all talk about mental health, right? Everyone's throwing these terms around, but like I don't see a whole lot of solutions out there before you go down these dark paths. Like what would you tell a young kid that's dealing with the pressures of life? And trying to help preserve their mental health so we don't have to go down these dark paths and then have to actually engage in recovery, you know, if we can avoid it if possible.
You know, and that's the thing, the preventative measures, like, you know, like I don't have the exact answer, Riley, and I don't think there's an exact medication that does that. I think it's being in around the most positive environment you can be in.
100%, yeah.
But there's so many things now that just derail society in general. Video games, cell phones, internet. I mean, these are social media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I tell kids now when I go out, I'm like, just be careful what you do.
Yeah.
You know, like, because social media can ruin your life on
it. Well, yeah, they're tools, right? And they can be misused. And then it's like taking a hammer. It's
great. And that creates a mental health
process
for a person. Yep. Because they say something and then they get hounded by 50 people.
Yeah.
Or 100 people.
You got to defend your character and all this other stuff.
Who you are.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
So if you're going to put something out there, stand by it.
Yeah, right.
And don't. That's probably the biggest lesson in life is that the sooner you can forget about what people think about you,
that's the truth.
The way better off you're going to be in life because people are going to just sometimes people just don't want to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, yeah. That is so true, right? Yes. People just can't wait to jump on. Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I always tell you: have the most conviction you can in yourself. Believe in yourself. Believe in the good that you have.
Yeah, that's it.
And lean on that.
Yeah. Wise words, Bundy.
Yeah,
well, I'm not a messiah, but
Dr. Bundy.
These are the words I say going on. I mean, again, and it's all from my own experience.
Yeah,
you know, just from the things that I've gone through.
And that's what makes it genuine, right?
It does, and I don't want other players to go through it. You know, like it was hard on me physically, mentally. Yeah. It was brutal. You know, but
can't imagine.
But it was also at the end of the day, you know, I didn't have to go through it. I did go through it, but it's probably my biggest form of pride, I guess, is me getting, you know, one day at a time, 11 and a half years almost, and. And I will have to do that again tomorrow, too.
Yeah. Well, it gives people hope. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just one of those things.
We like, do recover.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Body's designed to heal. The mind's designed to heal. Just got to nurture it and, and nourish it and all those good all the good things you're talking about and environment and people you're around, right? And positivity and mindset. All good stuff, man. Well, we appreciate you, Bundy.
Yeah,
everything
man.
You're doing.
Yeah, I love coming on, guys.
The recovery center, everything you're doing out in the community. You're banging the drum. Being truthful, not sugarcoating shit. We love that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know any other way. I mean, I think it's a really good trait.
It's a great trait.
I think I like developed it at like, I think I developed it like maybe at the early part of my recovery, to be honest with you. I just like, you know what?
Fuck it.
I'm not. Well,
let's be honest.
You know, it's
here,
a great
right?
thing. I mean, maybe. I mean, I've spoke pretty honestly about the hockey team for years. Maybe someone clearly didn't like it at the end of the day, but you know, I didn't sell myself off to go lie to the fans about how good the team was when they sucked all. You know, when they stunk for the whole year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and that's why you're appreciated. You know, because people want to hear the truth.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Really. So, well, we appreciate you coming on, man.
Great show. Yeah, as always, a huge fan of Nasty Knuckles. You guys are the best. both teammates, great teammates, and love you both, guys.
Yeah, love you too, brother.
Good luck May 21st.
Yes, can't wait.
May 21st, Enoch, which is Edmonton. 9 o'clock is we at fight.tv, Ice Wars. Don't miss it.
Beautiful.
Do not miss it.
Thanks, Bundy.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Barb.
All right, big thank you to our friend Chris Therrien, a.k.a. Bundy. What an amazing human. Oh, yeah. Appreciate him hopping on, spending some time in studio 2.0.
Yeah, it was nice to see him. Hadn't seen him in a little bit. And nice to have him here. A little different than when we had him on as an interview as far as his career and everything. And so it was nice to have him in and talk about these things he's got going, man. He's a busy man as well, just like AJ.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bundy's running around like a chicken with his head cut off, but getting a lot of things done, and it's impressive, man. And really proud of him for his, you know, his recovery center.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I loved how he talked about that and, you know, being able to tell his story and not be embarrassed. Hey, look, this happens. Everybody's got something wrong. We all know it. Like, you know, you don't go around telling everyone, but he's got a really unique story. Knuckles, I'm going to drop you, Knox. I'm going to drop
Knuckles.
It's all right. He just wants, hey, dude, he thinks we named it after him, so he wants to be in the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, he wants a little love, too. You know, he's like,
he wants some love.
Get him on the cam. Let's go.
Yeah. But, you know, he's come a long way, and he does a lot of good, man. And he's giving back to people.
Absolutely.
You know, the one good thing about Chris is that he says what he feels. You know, sometimes it's like you're like, whoa, but I mean, he doesn't sugarcoat it, and
right.
I've always respected
that.
Yeah, I do too. And you know, there's some things I could probably pipe up about, but I haven't yet. And you know, I got to give him credit because he calls it out how he sees it, and I like that about him. I like it a lot. No, it's
100%. And that's important too when you're doing work like he's doing with recovery and addiction, obviously. Like, you have to be honest, right? I mean, you can't hide. And, you know, I think he talked about it, you know, how he's over the years been more vocal and got more comfortable speaking his mind. And I think since he's been sober and everything. So, I think there are a lot of lessons there in the episode, you know, especially being vulnerable and telling your story, right? I mean, it can help save a life and possibly more than one, because, you know, everyone's going through their version of their shit. So,
right. Exactly.
Appreciate him.
Yeah. And I'm happy about him jumping on there with AJ with this.
I know. I can't wait to see this.
Man. I can't wait this coming weekend. I've been looking at the fight cards rigs, and one stuck out to me. Kind of because of the nicknames, which I love they have.
Beautiful.
The one guy's name is Travis Check. I believe that's how you pronounce it. But his nickname is Loose Cannon.
Huh, ooh.
Really? Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, right. I think everyone in here is a loose cannon. And the other guy is Bo Cornell. And his nickname is Jawbreaker, which would scare me.
Of course.
But what really stood out to me, the reason I'm bringing that up, is because the loose cannon is 5'7". And he weighs 205.
Man.
Okay. 205. Could you imagine me weighing 60 pounds more than I do right now?
Oh, man. You have to do a couple cycles.
I'm going to give myself 5'8".
Wow. You have to do a couple cycles, Nasty.
Sadsy. I'm 5'8". With my shoes on. But the thing about it is, The thing, I'm actually concerned for the Jawbreaker for Loose Cannon, because the guy he's fighting, the Jawbreaker, Bo Cornell, is 6'3 and 218. Now, I can only imagine the reach advantage that the Jawbreaker has on this guy. Like, I mean, maybe this guy just gets right in there tight and just starts chucking. He doesn't give a shit, probably, is the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
But these are the things that people probably aren't even looking at. But to me, I'm like, man, this guy, if he strings him out, not that I've done it, but I've seen you do it. I've seen 100 million fights. That guy's got a huge reach advantage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's in trouble.
That's only one of the fights, but this is going to be amazing, man. I'm so pumped for it.
Yeah, not to mention the guy, I'm not sure what his name is, but he's floating around three bills plus, like 318 or something like that. He gets a hold of a jawbreaker there, or loose cannon, he'll be in some trouble.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what I haven't seen yet, and I think it's up, but I like how it's all like the brackets or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's different weight divisions from the way they were talking, but this is going to be interesting, man. I'm really pumped for it. I think it's going to do really well.
I hope it does.
It'll just grow, I think. I mean, you're going to get more people that want to do this, you know?
So yeah, I'd like to think so. You know, it's entertainment. There's always going to be a market for fights, sanctioned fights, and this is a unique version of that. So we'll see how it goes, and wish them all the best, all the fighters the best, all the judges.
Yeah, everybody, good luck. Nothing serious, you know, no serious injuries.
Yeah,
hopefully. Exactly. And, you know, like he said, they've done a really good job preparing for that side of it medically. Yeah. You know, with the guy's helmets, you know, staying on the glove. And, you know, it's a good thing they have those gloves on, man. Riles, you got for a living, and it ain't fun. It's still going to hurt with a glove on. Doesn't matter, but.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, Riggs, you may know, I wonder if, like, part of fighting in hockey is grabbing on and getting a good hold. Or, you know,
yeah, I'm not sure what if the gloves actually are the padded ones with finger holes, or if they're like closed. I would think that there would have to be some finger holes, right? Because I've sparred with those back in the day.
I don't know,
like 4 ounce gloves with little. They must. I mean, I have a hard time believing they would be able to grab on without that.
Yeah, I would think so. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I'm excited to watch.
Yeah, you and me both, Nast. Well, that's it. It's episode 74 in the books.
Yes.
Make sure you tune in next week, episode 75. Until then, stay safe, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you got to predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.